tuned in to the R1 News, your stop for news and current affairs on the airwaves. 11 to 12 weekdays here on Radio 1 91 FM, Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi.
Tēnā koutou I tēnei ata, kei te whakarunga mai koe ki Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. Ko Zach Toku Ingoa.
Ko Kaya Toku Ingoa.
And you're listening to the Radio 1 Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi news show for Rapa Te Tekau Mā Toru.
Coming up on the show today, we have the snow report with USC's Peter Barclay. After that, we speak to Kiringawa Cassidy, a translator on the new Frozen Reo Māori movie about the importance of integrating Māori culture into cartoon classics.
After that, we've got a pre-record little interview about the International Film Festival accepting funding from the Israeli embassy and the filmmakers who threatened to boycott said festival. After that, we've got another pre-record interview with none other than Auckland MP Chloe Swarbrick around the importance of local politics and its relationship to central government. Following that, we've got an astrology report. We were covering three waters, the Pisces, Cancer and Scorpio signs. Before we get to any of that, though, we've got some news and weather bulletins coming up. But before we even get to that, we've got to get through at least one song. So here's Scott Walker with The Girls and the Dogs, Kakite.
The girls are as fast as a game, or as bright as a flame, and you're always to blame. The girls are as pink as a light, or as dark as a night, ah, but they're always right. The girls are as cold as a sphinx, always dreaming of minx, and they'll drive you to drink. The girls are as soft as a sigh, that whispers goodbye, then leaves you to cry. But the dogs, well, they're only dogs, just wagging their tails as they watch it end. The dogs, well, they're only dogs, and maybe that's why they're man's best friend. The girls can make you feel cold, can make you feel old, an antique to be sold. The girls, they'll play with your heart, they'll tear you apart, you're never too smart. The girls, they'll throw you from towers, they'll whip you with flowers, it depends on the hours. The girls will treat you like trash, or let you be brash, it depends on your cash. But the dogs don't depend on a thing, they just lick your face as they see it. And oh, the dogs don't depend on a thing, and maybe that's why they're man's best friend. The girls should know that they're vain, they'll poison your brain, they'll drive you insane. The girls will laugh at your jokes, how they love Dakota, but it's all a hoax. The girls are still making dates, still making you wait, and they say you're late. The girls are yours for a throw, at least you think so, ah, but you never know. The dogs, well, you know the dogs, they lift up a leg as they see it end. Dogs, well, you know the dogs, and maybe that's why they're man's best friend. The girls, they're not what they seem, they all have a scheme, they call it a dream. The girls are as hot as they please, and you're down on your knees with the greatest of ease. The girls say you're on the right track, and then they take it all back, tie it up in a sack. The girls, they'll give it of course, but they give with such force that it gives you remorse. But the dogs, they give nothing at all, for all they can do is just watch it. And all the dogs, they give nothing at all, and maybe that's why they're man's best friend. And yet, it's because of the girls, when they've knocked us about, and our tears want to shout, that we kick the dogs out.
Kia ora koutou, that was Scott Walker with The Girls and the Dogs. It's currently 11:06 here on Radio 1 Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. This is the Rapa R1 News Show. Now we've got Adelaide Kara here doing, oh sorry, Adelaide Dunn here doing, here doing the news and weather bulletin.
You're tuned in to the R1 News, your stop for news and current affairs on the airwaves. 11 to 12 weekdays here on Radio 1 91 FM, Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi.
Oh.
Kia ora, Adelaide.
The R1 News headlines.
Oh, technical difficulties here.
We all good. Okay. My arm? Am I happy?
We are happy.
Yeah, we're rolling. Awesome. Kia ora ko Adelaide toku ingoa, and these are your R1 News and weather updates. Dunedin City Councillor Carmen Houlihan has come out in support of the city's music venues after concerns were raised about the future of iconic Dunedin music venue, the Crown Hotel. Houlihan said urgent action was needed and that live music and live theatre add to the liveability of the city. These comments come after the Dunedin City Council approved the resource consent for the four-storey development next door to the Crown on Rattray Street. Aotearoa Mayor Aaron Hawkins called the Crown the home of New Zealand's best jukebox and said we can't afford to lose this one. The official cash rate is expected to increase again today, with spectators forecasting an increase of 0.5%, bringing the rate to 2.5%. Interest rates on mortgages and other lending has risen sharply in recent months in response to the heightened interest rates. However, some banks have started lowering their rates again in response to a reduction in the cost of wholesale funding. Infometrics chief economist Gareth Kieran said that it is unlikely that we'll see an adverse market reaction to another increase in the official cash rate. Increases to the official cash rate are attempts by the Reserve Bank to curb inflation, resulting from large influxes of cash by nations across the world, with the intention of keeping economies afloat in the midst of the pandemic. And now we turn to the weather.
The R1 News weather.
Maybe don't touch grass today, folks. Expect medium to heavy rain throughout the day and some snow above 500 metres. Expect gales in exposed places and southerlies. We've got a high of Iwa 9 and a low of Fitu 7, so be sure to wrap up in some layers. Tomorrow we've got perpetual showers and rain with more southwesterlies. Temperature-wise, the day is going to be a little worse with a high of... Awesome.
Kia ora for those fantastic news and weather updates, Adelaide.
That was the R1 News headlines. Catch up at r1.co.nz/news or find us at Radio 1 91 FM on Twitter or R1 News NZ on Instagram, and tune in to R1 News at 11 a.m. on weekdays.
You're listening to R1 News. That was Adelaide Dunn with the headlines and weather. Coming up, we speak to Māori translator Kiringawa Cassidy about Disney Reo Māori's initiative to translate Disney cartoon classics into Te Reo Māori. But first we have Peter Barclay here with the Snow Report. Kia ora, Peter.
Yeah, good morning, Kai. Goliath's looking bloody good for the South Island ski fields right now. Just as they were due for a small top-up after one of the snowiest dunes in history, boy are we getting it. In case you haven't noticed, it's raining tons in Dunedin at the moment. And as I always like to say, if it's raining here, it's snowing in Wanaka, and I've never been more correct. If you look at Cadrona's webcam, you're totally out of luck because there's such a heavy blizzard, you're completely blind. Unfortunately, that means that most of the hills will be closed for a couple days while they deal with all the fresh white stuff, but it's going to keep snowing until Friday, and this Saturday could be an absolute blinder. The freezing level is staying super low, so the snow will be really nice, dry, and fluffy for you frothers, but the roads up the mountains will likely require chains. On Sunday this week, we've got another huge system coming in from the southwest, which could leave mountains like Treblecount with as much as 40 centimeters on Sunday and Monday, which has certainly gotten me excited. Listen, if you want to hit the mountain, Friday and Saturday are your days. Treblecount looks great, as it always has challenging terrain and some awesome snow on top makes it something really special. But if you're more of a park rider or the steep hills and drop-offs aren't for you, Cadrona is my pick and Carnet looks good too. Treble, Carnet and Cardies all have reduced cloud and wind on Friday and Saturday, which could make for some really lovely riding on the fresh snow, so by all means get out there. That being said, Remarkables doesn't have any days this week, which won't be ruined by cloud and wind, so I wouldn't bother going there. As I said, Friday and Saturday are my picks, but if you're too stoked to keep yourself together and you don't mind the stormy power conditions, any day this week will certainly have lovely snow. That being said, if you've got the patience for it, this storm is really laying the groundwork for one of the best seasons we've had in years, so don't fret because there will still be plenty of skiing and riding to get into in the coming months, so get stoked. Of course, it's not a snow report without mentioning Castle Street. If you're excited for snow party on Castle Street tonight, the snow level is 500 metres, which is 400 above Dunedin, so there will be plenty of rain, but absolutely no snow. As always, if you're keen to carpool to the mountain or want to go on any multiple any of multiple ski trips this year, as well as meet an awesome community of skiers and boarders, make sure to sign up for the Otago University Snow Sports Club. Thanks, Tans.
Kia ora, kia ora, Peter, for that fantastic snow report. It is currently 11:12 here on the Arapa News Show on Radio 1. Up next, we've got a little interview with Kenangawa Cassidy about translating Disney classics into Te Reo Māori. First, we've got Ruth Sparrow with Mordecai. Stay tuned.
Thank you.
Kia ora koutou, you're listening to the Rapa R1 News Show here on Radio 1 Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. It is currently 11:17 a.m. Ko Zektoku Ingoa. And before on the show, we had the weekly USC Snow Report with Peter Barclay presenting that.
Ko kaia toku ingoa. Disney Reo Māori is a relatively new branch of Disney focusing on recasting, translating and re-recording Disney cartoon classics into Aotearoa's indigenous language. Earlier this week, I spoke to Kiringawa Cassidy, translator on the upcoming film Frozen Reo Māori, about the importance of platforming Māori language through classics such as The Lion King and Moana, and what this could mean for the Māori film industry in the future.
Over Matariki weekend, Aotearoa welcomed the release of a new version of iconic Disney film The Lion King, translated into Te Reo Māori. The film hit cinemas after being fully translated, recast and overdubbed in Te Reo Māori over the course of a year. Disney is currently working on adding Frozen to their repertoire of translated films, alongside The Lion King and Moana. I'm here with Kiringawa Cassidy, one of the translators working on Frozen, to discuss the importance of initiatives like Disney Reo Māori. Kia ora, Kiringawa.
Kia ora.
Tweety Waititi, producer of the 2017 Moana translation, Moana Reo Māori, explained, "For our language to thrive, it must reach the hearts and homes of our people." However, it could be argued that these translations are doing a lot more than just platforming the Māori language. Notably, they're potentially providing representation for younger Māori speakers who aren't used to seeing their language featured in cinemas. What do you think this language platforming and representation will mean to Māori communities, especially younger Māori speakers?
So representation to the Māori community, especially nowadays, and especially through such big initiatives such as The Lion King, such as Moana, such as Frozen, are revolutionary. So what I think that they're going to change how the next generations of Māori and of this country are going to be raised. Even in our childhood, there were not many shows and not many things on TV that we could see in Te Reo, watch in Te Reo, and definitely even less way back in the day. But now there's everything. You can just go on Disney Plus, one of the extra little side things, and watch it in a different language, and one of those languages is Te Reo. So it's going to be normalised, but for us who have grown up with less than what we have today, it's crazy, it's mind-blowing. But for the next generations, they won't know a time before any of this happened, so it's going to be awesome.
Te Reo Māori translations of The Lion King have been platformed in cinemas around Aotearoa, making them more accessible to the general public. This sort of initiative could potentially encourage more cinemas to platform Māori films and more audiences to view them. What sort of implications do you think translating these Western cartoon classics will have for the Māori film industry?
Oh, it's going to completely change the Māori film industry too. We have Taika Waititi directing and working with the Marvel franchise, and that's crazy. I don't want to spoil Thor for anyone, but there's a very Māori twist that Taika has put on those movies, which is awesome. And coming back to movies locally here and these Disney movies that we're translating, I guess it recreates that nostalgia. So you have the 90s babies and their nostalgia with Lion King, and then a bit further down the track with Frozen. It's recreating that warm feeling, that comfortable feeling that we have with these Disney movies, and then putting them in our language and making them more special with our language.
By translating popular American films such as The Lion King and Frozen into Te Reo Māori, it's possible to recycle the resources and funding provided to American films to create content accessible to those who only speak Te Reo or even just want to see their language represented in mainstream media. Some may argue, however, that the funding put into translation, recasting and redubbing these films would be better directed to creating brand new films which focus on Māori culture and stories. Do you think this is accurate, or do you believe there is a demand for both new films and redubbed Western classics?
There's definitely a demand for both. The creating new movies that would focus on culture and redubbing these classics. But I think dubbing the classics at the moment is a good place to start. And then as we do a few more, maybe down the track, I'm not sure at this point, we can start to push Disney and push those big companies into looking more at not just Māori culture, just indigenous cultures around the world. And they've definitely done that with some of the new movies that they've put out, focusing on different indigenous peoples. And we saw that with Moana. That was a good, you know, that was an awesome representation of Polynesian people, of Pacific Island people, including Māori. But yeah, there's definitely a big demand for both, but I think we should start with dubbing the classics.
What would you like to see in the future from Disney, other production companies, and the wider film industry to ensure Māori culture and language receive adequate platforming and representation in film?
To make sure that you have a Māori flavour of things, to make sure you have Māori representation, you need to work with Māori. So you can't put anything that looks Māori out without the involvement of Māori along the way. So as we're sort of nudging Disney at the moment, we can build on those relationships that we have with those big corporations to include us more and to work with us with creating these new opportunities.
Thank you, Kerengawa, for chatting. I can't wait to see all your hard work on the big screen when Frozen Reo Māori reaches cinemas.
Kia ora, that was a little yarn with Kerengawa Cassidy about translating Disney classics into Te Reo Māori. Coming up on the program, we have a interview with Cole Yeoman from some film festival, talking about Israeli embassy funding going into that festival and the backlash it has created. But before we've got to go to that, we'll play The Mollusk by Ween. It is currently 11:25 here on the Arapa R1 News Program. Ka kite. Yeah. Kia ora koutou, you're listening to the Rapa R1 News Programme here on Radio 1, 91 FM. It is currently 11:28 a.m. Previously on the show, we had an interview with Kieringawa Cassidy about Disney classic movies being translated into Te Reo Māori.
A group of filmmakers selected for the Dock Edge Film Festival have signed an open letter to the festival, written by Cole Yauman, calling for Dock Edge to drop funding it has accepted from the Israeli embassy in Aotearoa. Earlier in the week, I spoke to Cole Yauman about the letter, its intention, and the intricacies of Dock Edge's involvement in the festival.
Cool. Kia ora, Cole. How are you?
Kia ora. Good, thank you. How are you?
Good, thank you. Currently, Dock Edge Film Festival accepts funding and official support from the Israeli embassy. You close your open letter by requesting that Dock Edge end their affiliation with the apartheid Israeli embassy. Why is it important that Dock Edge Film Festival end their relationship with the Israeli embassy?
Good question. It's very important for a range of reasons. First, I'd say that that this is part of a much wider issue regarding affiliation with Israel. So Israel is an apartheid state. There's been numerous human rights organisations that have come out over the last couple of years with well-documented reports saying that the systemic policies and practices that Israel have in place fit the legal definition of apartheid, which is a crime against humanity in international law. And like in New Zealand, right, it's a pretty clear line that we can draw in the sand that apartheid is not okay. There is no justification or acceptable reason for apartheid. And like I say, it's part of a much wider issue in regards to lots of different film festivals and cultural spaces where Israel will use culture and art as a form of propaganda. So they curate this image of sophistication and philanthropy to essentially whitewash or move the image away from their abhorrent crimes and to justify their apartheid, right? It's incredibly important that Dock Edge recognise that actually it's not acceptable to affiliate with an apartheid regime. It's not acceptable to act like it's business as usual, because business as usual is effectively an endorsement. It's saying, hey, look, yeah, apartheid's not great, but hey, it's not so bad that we're going to keep doing business with you.
In your open letter, you describe Dock Edge receiving funding from the Israeli embassy as an offensive and unacceptable affiliation. You explain that numerous human rights organizations conclude Israeli systemic policies, practices, and human rights violations meet the legal definition of apartheid. Some may argue that by accepting funding from the Israeli embassy, Dock Edge is not necessarily actively endorsing or affiliating with the Israeli embassy. How would you respond to this perspective?
Yeah, well, I mean, I would say that it absolutely is. In terms of actively endorsing, like it's not, you know, they're not writing on a big banner saying like, we endorse apartheid. I don't think anyone would be, you know, stupid enough to do that. That would be terrible. But like I say, continuing business as usual, continuing relationships and accepting funding and normalizing that you can go that you can go to a festival that is sponsored by Israel, normalizing that you can just kind of maintain those relationships while a state is actively and intentionally oppressing and persecuting people under this under apartheid, right? Is absolutely, and what am I saying? it may not be a blatant endorsement, but it gives the state credibility. It gives them legitimacy, and it is an affiliation. And so, as a result, it is effectively an active endorsement because Dock Edge have chosen to accept this funding when they don't need to accept this funding.
On the 3rd of June 2022, Dock Edge selected filmmakers received an email from the festival in response to the Palestine Solidarity Network Aotearoa, or PSNA, getting in touch with some filmmakers to request they boycott the festival and withdraw their films in response to Dock Edge's affiliation with the Israeli embassy. The PSNA's message reads, It has come recently to light that Doc Edge upholds the Israeli embassy as a partner and sponsor. This week, we corresponded with Doc Edge's board of directors chair, Glenn Johnson, to express our concerns. We asked that Doc Edge remove the Israeli embassy as a partner. The board refused, stating that Doc Edge is apolitical. The PSNA concludes by writing, "While we understand the enormous effort and achievement of bringing a film to a festival audience, we hope and ask that you will reconsider your participation in Doc Edge Festival and withdraw in solidarity." Doc Edge Film Festival responded to the PSNA's call to boycott the festival with a letter which was emailed to Doc Edge selected filmmakers just after 8 p.m. on June 3rd. Doc Edge explained that the letter was in direct response to the statements from PSNA, stating, "We are writing to you as you may have or may not have been contacted by representatives from Palestine Solidarity Network Aotearoa, PSNA, requesting you boycott Doc Edge by withdrawing your film or your financial support." The letter of response did not address the primary content of PSNA's messages, Doc Edge's affiliation with the Israeli embassy through accepting funding. The response talked instead about a specific film, Dead Sea Guardians, and whether or not it should be screened. Cole, your open letter calls for the festival to unaffiliate with the Israeli embassy, never even mentioning the AFOR film's inclusion in the film. Similarly, Doc Edge's letter does not address their own affiliation, independent to that of the film, Deep Sea Guardians. Why do you think Doc Edge has responded by discussing the film Deep Sea Guardians as opposed to their personal affiliation with the Israeli embassy?
I mean, it's shifting the focus, essentially, which is great PR. I'll give them that. Fantastic PR. But yeah, that's all it is. It shifts the focus. It's a very easy navigation away from essentially something that they cannot defend, or something that they've certainly shown no interest in actually addressing or defending, to something that they can clearly defend. So it shifted it from partnering with an apartheid regime and accepting support and like I say, normalising that that's an okay thing. And instead they've shifted it to these are pressure groups trying to censor this film. They're trying to just stop narratives that they don't like, which is absolutely not what we have been calling for in our letter or what PSNA were calling for. So it's really frustrating to see them trying to shift that focus. Now, the way that they can do that as well is because they, when I first reached out to them with my concern, they called back and kind of downplayed and defended the affiliation by saying, actually, the only thing that funding from embassies goes towards is the promotion of a particular film and the travel costs for filmmakers to come over and be a part of the festival, which, you know, in of itself is great. Like, it's fantastic to have filmmakers there in person and you know, promotion's promotion. But actually, when that's coming at the cost of partnering with an apartheid regime, that's not acceptable. And particularly in this day and age where we are more than capable of using Zoom, and they have for many of their interviews, it's not actually essential. It's not funding that is needed to make the festival run. And so it's actively choosing unnecessary funding to run the festival. So again, they've managed to shift it from it, well, if we don't have the funding, we can't show the film, therefore you guys calling for us to drop the funding is censorship, which is absolute nonsense. They can absolutely show the film without accepting official Israel state sponsorship. I'm looking at the website right now, and they are the logo of the Israeli embassy is sitting on there as an official supporter, which is hugely disappointing. And and on that note, hugely offensive to Palestinians living in New Zealand, that letter that Doc Edge put out as a response to PSNA's contacting of filmmakers really frustrated me because, like I say, it missed the point, it shifted the focus, but also it's hugely offensive to Palestinians living in New Zealand, right, that they would go to, like, they're wanting to go to a film festival, a fantastic film festival, may I say. Like, I love the co-puppet and I love the films they've brought in. But as a Palestinian, if I was going to go see that and then saw on that program, you know, the logo of the state that has been, that is the very reason I'm in New Zealand, right? The logo of the state, I'm not Palestinian, I'm putting this in the context of Palestinians living in New Zealand. It's deeply offensive to see that logo on the program of a state that you daily hear about persecuting and oppressing your friends and your old neighbours and your family back in Palestine. And so, you know, it's absolutely justified that they would be offended. And they were offended and reached out. And for Doc Edge to respond just slamming them as as pressure groups completely misses the point and is hugely offensive. And it's also hugely offensive to us as filmmakers. It doesn't feel like a particularly safe space when there is a cultural festival, a film festival that would rather unflinchingly defend their affiliation with a state that is well documented to persecute and murder journalists than listen to the genuine concerns of the journalists and documentary filmmakers who are participating in that festival. It's a pretty rubbish move on their part.
Well, what would you like to see from Doc Edge immediately and long-term following your open letter?
Yeah. Look, I mean, immediately is a tricky one because the Dead Sea Guardians is screening and that's fantastic. But the pity is that those costs have already been spent. That funding from Israel has already, it's already been used. You can't take that back. What's done is done. But what would be a great sign immediately, and it's great, may I say as well, it's great that we have the filmmakers here, we can have these conversations, but the funding was the issue, and it's happened. So immediately it would be a great reassurance if Doc Edge were to drop the Israeli embassy logo from their program. That would just be a clear sign that actually they do have intent to change. And then long term, obviously, is following through on that and not partnering with an apartheid regime. And of course, you could pull the card, well, you can find issue with any regime. But apartheid is an incredibly clear and valid issue. That is not an acceptable thing to be partnering with or legitimizing or giving credibility to. So long term, essentially not doing it again. That goes wider than Doc Edge. Like I say, this is part of a much wider conversation, particularly in New Zealand, about decolonizing our cultural spaces, right? And getting the harm of racism out of there, which is, apartheid is racism, and it comes from a culture of colonization. So we want Doc Edge to recognize human rights and to keep our cultural spaces free from the harm and normalization of racism and colonization.
Thank you, Cole.
Cool. Thank you very much for having me.
That was Cole Yauman on his open letter to Doc Edge Film Festival, calling for them to drop funding from the Israeli embassy in Aotearoa. I approached Doc Edge last week for a statement on the interview and received a brief response from their publicist, explaining that if Doc Edge had anything to add, it would be sent to me. However, no statement from Doc Edge has been provided. Otipoti's student magazine critic also covered Yeoman's letter to Doc Edge, publishing, among other interviews, a general statement made by the festival director Dan Shannon. Shannon responded to the Palestine Solidarity Network Aotearoa's concerns about the funding, describing that Doc Edge acknowledge and respect PSNA's own independent voice and efforts, but defended their curatorial independence to choose films and partners as they saw fit. Shannon said, "We strongly believe that restricting freedom of expression contributes to greater polarisation around complex issues."
Coming up on the program, we have an interview with Chloe Spoorbrick surrounding the importance of local governments and their relationship to central government. And this kind of comes at a time when local elections seem to be coming to a fore in Aotearoa, New Zealand. It is currently 11:41 on the program. Up next, we've got Elders Harding with Fever. Take care. Kia ora koutou, you're listening to the R1 Rapa News Program here on Radio 1 91 FM. It is currently 11:45. Previously on the program, we had an interview with Cole Yeoman from Dock Edge. He's a filmmaker involved with this international film festival called Dock Edge, part of a boycott from some filmmakers in that festival because of Israeli embassy funding into said festival.
Earlier today, we caught up with Auckland Central MP and Green Party member Chloe Swarbrick to discuss the relationship between local and central government in the run-up to the Dunedin local elections taking place on the 8th of October. Chloe discussed the importance of local governments, their role, and what their future alongside central governments looks like. Kia ora, Chloe.
Kia ora. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. You got your start in politics through local body elections, so you have a lot of experience of the relationship between local and central governments from both sides. How would increasing local political engagement support central and local level change?
It would change everything, honestly. I don't think that there is enough recognition across the whole country, let alone in many of our towns and cities, of the power of local government. In Auckland in particular, in 2016, when this random 22-year-old decided to leave BFM and run for the Auckland LT, that was me, I decided to do so off the back of actually the closure of one of my favourite music venues, which was a perfect example of how we don't prioritise certain types of heritage or creativity or creative spaces. And it was a small to medium-sized venue called the King's Arms, which was kind of critical at a point in our city's history for creating spaces for young local musicians to get a foot in the door, build an audience, take risks, and all of those things that are necessary to build a sustainable career in the music industry. And I just, you know, saw that as our built environment changing and those opportunities disappearing, and trying to map that to all of the bright spots of really freaking awesome people who were all around the city who I was watching at that point in time. I know we're freaking out now in 2022 about people leaving overseas and taking all their talent with them, but we were having the same conversations about the brain drain back then. And I found it really cooked how mapped to that was these local body candidates who were talking solely about rates. And they were talking about rates through the lens of something that only people who own property pay, which is just totally untrue. If you pay rent, you pay rates. Your landlord's not getting that money from nowhere. And they weren't really keen to talk about what we do with those rates, or why people would live in the city, or all of the powers that local government has. You know, like when you turn on your tap, when you walk down your street, when you get on a bus, all of those things are things that are determined by local government. Same with the quality of nightlife in your area, the cafes and bars and the other cultural spaces. So I think, you know, even right now as a local MP, the biggest and the best outcomes that we get are actually working directly with Auckland Council, because they can move a lot quicker to do things that take central government years and a million reviews and then a whole lot of political argy-bargy to try and get through.
Do you think more emphasis should be placed on regional council elections, as the regional councils are responsible for some pretty key infrastructure and those elections can often be overlooked?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, if you look at the general election turnout, it's usually around 75%, whereas for our local body election turnout, it is, if you amalgamate across the country, it's around 41%, but in places like Auckland, it's more like 34%. And I think a large reason for that is how our mainstream media has been, you know, syndicated and whittled down to no longer really having those local interest reporters who are reporting on democracy and the stuff that's happening in our built environments, unless it's in some of our major cities. Like, I found it mind-blowing that, for example, our petition to pedestrianise Queen Street got national coverage, which was obviously awesome for the work that we were doing on the ground in Auckland, but you don't see those same kind of debates at a really local level reaching the way up to the national stage, or even getting on the front page of most of our syndicated papers across the country when they're impacting people, unless they're things, you know, that are kind of life or death around water quality and those kinds of things. So, yeah, I think that were we to realise the power of local government, then we could make far more effective and quick change in our communities. And yeah, that is the power of local government, and it's why I'm such a simp for it.
In 2016, you spoke to Local Government magazine, explaining the biggest issue facing the local government sector over the next 5 years would be proactively adapting to and planning for the changing world. Mm. You described lack of long-term thinking and future-proofing put the sector at risk of becoming redundant. You hoped future local government would have more autonomy and freedom to plan the future of their cities. How do you believe the relationship between local and central government has progressed since 2016?
It hasn't been good, eh? I mean, there's so many things that have impacted local government that have occurred. There's obviously a range of Pandora's boxes that we could open here, from Three Waters to the DHB, health reforms, through to, in the last term of Parliament, we had another review of a review called the Shand Inquiry, which was about 10 years old, and the outcome of that was the same thing that we've known for 10 plus years, which is that local government doesn't have the adequate resources to do the things that it needs to do, let alone that it's charged to do under the Local Government Act. You know, if you look across the world, the average amount of spending that occurs on a ratio of local and central government is around 30% at a local government level. In Aotearoa, it's less than half of that, at around 12 or 14%. So, you know, from the get-go, we've seen this kind of cultural norm in Parliament, and this is 10 plus years, where local government is consistently blamed for things but not given the resources to resolve those problems. And I think as you see that occurring, that kind of cultural norm becoming more and more concrete, alongside the media becoming more and more amalgamated, that you have less coverage of local issues and therefore understandably less public and community awareness of where potential responsibility for resolving problems, you know, comes from. And you also lose the ability to empower people to create their own solutions in a local context to solve those problems, because we end up focusing solely on central government. And I think, again, that's an indictment on a lack of kind of civics education, but also hopefully a kind of call to action for those who are operating in our media, which, you know, there's a whole other can of worms we could open there around the hollow middle and a lack of resourcing, and how, you know, for example, something which is focused on cracks in the sidewalk or storm or wastewater might not get the same amount of clicks as, you know, something controversial, whatever given politician has said. But it's the really important stuff.
In the same interview, you described the current working relationship between local and central governments as tense. Do you still believe that?
I think, so we're currently seeing another local government review underway, and what I'm really worried about, having, you know, been in Parliament now for 5 years, we are seeing review after review after inquiry, kind of with all of these recommendations that could potentially be transformative, left to languish. And while I'm sure there will be somewhat transformational recommendations, potentially constitutional, because one of the things that really boggles my mind about local government is that it's not kind of, you know, deeply entrenched constitutionally, given that we don't have a Supreme Codified Constitution in this country, that local government exists by virtue of parliamentary statute, which means that it's remit and its resourcing and everything else can change at the drop of the hat with a simple parliamentary majority. And I think that local government is deserving of its own status to that effect. And I think were it to have that status, then hopefully we would end up with all the more engagement at a local level. But yeah, I don't think that the power of local government is adequately understood across the country. And I don't think that that's any one person's individual fault. It is a big time systemic issue.
Now, over the last decade, we've seen a series of new local government relationships between council bodies and tangata whenua. Places such as Rotorua and Otipoti come to mind. Mm. But these relationships can often be arranged on the sheer goodwill of said council rather than any specific legislation. And critics of these new local government and Māori relations say these relationships don't suffice in terms of delivering on Treaty of Waitangi promises. Do you agree with these sentiments? And how would you like to see local government better uphold their responsibilities as treaty partners?
So as a small pākehā from central Auckland, my hot take on this, so the Greens' position is that Te Tiriti o Waitangi is not something to be settled, it's something to be honoured, and that's something which you'll see reflected in all of our treaty settlement speeches, is that if we are treating this kind of constitutional, and you know, there's rightful debates around whether it's kind of founding, given you know, the Declaration of Independence 5 years earlier and otherwise. I think that when we're talking about things like co-governance, actually, Bang Te Whenua preemptively, that is a compromise. Co-governance is a compromise based on, you know, sovereignty. So what we are trying to do is figuring out how to retrofit, you know, this recognition of Te Tiriti inside of what is effectively a colonial Western framework of the world and how democracy is supposed to operate. And that is worlds apart from the likes of what was envisioned in Matiki Mai and other amazing kind of constitutional thoughts and contributions from the likes of Moana Jackson and other incredible Māori academics who have done huge public service and in envisioning what our future of democracy and our future of governance in this country could look like. But I totally pay heed to exactly that point that you raise about how, you know, interestingly, most of the development on relationships with iwi and hapu across this country have largely come from local government and from the discretion of, you know, some really good people in some really good places. And funnily enough, that's actually, I think, the way that things kind of should be, is that if we're looking at the future of what governance in this country looks like, again, I'm a Green and localism is my jam and I'm a simp for local government. So how do we devolve that power? And therefore, how do we have those far more localized relationships? And in turn, when people see that action happening on the ground, they are all the more likely to get engaged and therefore to feel represented by what's occurring. So I think, yeah, moving away from a highly centralized model is a good thing. But I also think that it's really important that we bear in mind that, again, co-governance is one potential manifestation of what it might look like to honour Te Tiriti o Waitangi. That's going to look different in different places, and that is always going to come down to relationships with mana whenua in different places across Aotearoa.
How would you like to see the relationship between local and central government evolve further over the next 5 years?
I'd like to see quite marked transformation in it. I think that central government has treated local government as at best a little brother and at worst a wimp of them politics in the first place. I just want constitutional transformation. I want the status of local government cemented and heightened and local government resourced adequately. I'd also like to see changes to the way that voting on local government works, which currently I think, you know, I don't think it's the be-all and end-all of it, and it definitely won't be a silver bullet for solving lower voter turnout. But the postal voting ballot is a barrier. It's a massive barrier to people voting. It also is, I think, really anti-democratic that if you own property in multiple areas across this country, you get to vote in multiple elections. I think it's insane that more people don't know about that and that we're not having an immediate change of those rules. So yeah, how would I like to see the relationship between local and central government change? I'd like to see power sharing, real power sharing, and real power sharing doesn't just mean giving local government more responsibility, it means giving them more resources.
Kia ora koutou, that was Chloe Swarbrick, Greens MP and Auckland-based MP. Chloe Swarbrick talking about the relationship between local and central government and local elections. Do you know what time it is, Kaya?
It is 11:58 a.m.
More specifically, it's the astrology report time.
The Radio 1 Astrology Report.
Atamarie, bon matin, haere mai, and welcome to the estranged Radio 1 Astrology Report, a weekly segment where we here at The One decipher the elusive and profound micro and macro movements of the stars to figure out what they mean for you, the listener. In 9 and 8, we're tackling three waters, and no, not the water management system, we're talking Pisces, Cancer, and Scorpios. Firstly, the irrational and creative Pisces. As the pernicious moon enters Alpha Capricorn, you'll feel the sudden urge to undertake some marine activities. I say you ought to take advantage of the tragic weather by getting amongst the water and turning into the slippery fish you know deep down that you are. the campus arm of the Leith is bulging at the seams with rainwater. Surely take a dive and make a return to nature, dear Pisces.
Ushka, what you've all been waiting for. Now onto all you Blimmin Cancers, as the Chad Capricorn moon forms a sweet and sultry connection with Mars. You'll feel an immense loneliness and the need to improve your dating life. The most at risk of you Cancers are the gamers, no surprises, so Cancer gamers, take heed. You've got to put down the video games. No more League of Legends, no more Minecraft, and most importantly, no more Fortnite for the next fortnight. Get out there and find that special someone.
Lastly, we've got the boogie Scorpios. Now, a friend of mine told me that they thought Scorpios were a fire sign.
That was me.
But no fire sign would be so crepuscular. I get it. It's Riori, and you want to pull a big one every night out. But come on, you've got to pack it in and take care of yourself, Scorpio. Put aside your need for attention this week, and there will be plenty more parties in the future. Just get a good night's rest, Scorpio.
Hugs and kisses.
Hugs and kisses from R1. Alrighty, I think that just about does the show, doesn't it?
Sounds like it.
Sounds like, should we do a little recap of what we went over today on
Beautiful.
The show?
Beautiful, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Today on the show, we had the weekly snow report with Usk's Peter Barclay. We spoke to Te Reo Māori translator Kitengawa Cassidy about the translation of Disney films into Te Reo Māori and how this could influence the future of the Māori film industry. We spoke to filmmaker Cole Yauman about his open letter to the Dock Edge Festival, calling for the festival to drop Israeli embassy funding, and we talked to Auckland Central MP Chloe Swarbrick about the power and importance of local government and its evolving relationship with central politics in the run-up to the Otipoti local elections. We rounded off with our weekly astrology report focusing on the troublesome trio, Scorpio, Cancer and Pisces.
This has been the Rapa R1 News Show. Be sure to tune in every weekday, 11 to 12, for more great local student news. Have a fantastic day, everyone. Enjoy the weather and have a good week. Ka kite.
You've been tuned in to the R1 News, weekdays from 11 to 12 here on Radio 1 91 FM, Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. Catch up at r1.co.nz/news or find us at Radio 1 91 FM on Twitter or R1 News NZ on Instagram.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast! You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast!